Bonjour, everyone. Welcome back to the Magpie Channel TV. Welcome to TMC Podcast Episode 11. We've got the new makes in the building.
New makes, hopefully they work.
So this is all trial and error. So please do let us know live on YouTube now if you can hear us all right, because as we see, this is the first time testing these new makes out. So please let us know if the audio is okay. If not, then we are knackered.
Yeah.
We're clear out of things.
Not really sure what to do if they don't work. So,
got the new audio interface, got the new makes. We're going to have guests on as well, so we can share the makes out. So that's the plan. Hopefully it sounds fine. And thank you to the audio listeners as well, who hopefully can hear us.
Sounding
fresh. Good stuff. That's what we need to hear. Everything good, says Aaron.
Loud and clear.
That's what we're like to hear. The makes are sounding fresh. That's crispy fresh. Money well spent then. So
you know what else is crisp and fresh? A nice blind faith.
Ooh, that is probably the numero uno in the
Last night, and I was in bed last night. What was I watching? I was watching some new, not new, it's old, but it's the first time I've seen it. Happy Valley. Me and the wife started Happy Valley last night, and I was having one of these. I was just sat there, just having a sit, thinking, this is fucking bullshit. This is really, really. I was like, you kind of get better than the blind faith.
Yeah, it is the best thing.
Sensational.
I'm on the old Citra stores, to be fair. Take a citrusy ale, and it's absolutely delightful as well.
I wish to get the cheat code back in. I haven't had that for a few weeks.
A little bit annoyed about it, to be honest with you. Aye, sort it out. We're here at Anarchy Brewery, as always, so thank you to them for hosting us. You can scan the QR code on your screen now as well to grab yourself some beers and support War Flags in the process. If you choose, it's up there.
There it is.
And the link is also in the description. You can see it on your screen as well. This week then, Keg, we are going to digest a lovely away win.
Lovely.
To Fulham. Mm-hmm. And then we've got plenty of other topics to get through, as well as a look towards Spurs on Saturday. So any questions, get them in the chat and we'll come back to them at the end of the show. But let's start off then, Kay, with that 1-0 win at Craven Cottage / Chicken Cottage. What did you make of it?
Win's a win.
That's 3 points, 3 points.
That's all that counts.
Brexit's Brexit.
We've gone through them over the last couple of podcasts, like trying to predict like how the rest of the season would go, and last week, like how obviously the Fulham game in particular would go, and we both said we've got to win. Like, we both knew it wasn't going to be pretty because they're in pretty good form. They smashed Spurs the week beforehand. Santiago Munoz is in wicked form.
Santiago Munoz, he missed a couple of chances though, thankfully.
He did, aye. But no, they're a tricky, tricky team, and especially going away where we've had a bit of a choppy record this season, mostly kind of shit, not really the best away, but
unless it's Fulham.
Unless it's Fulham, I three times, what, December, February, and April, we'll beat them now.
So five weeks in a row in the Premier League at Craven Cottage.
But no, it's a good win. I don't think it was really the best performance, but obviously we've had more and more injuries that we just cannot even get a hold of these days. I don't think it was the best performance, but a 1-0 away win to a pretty good.
So that hasn't went off on your side. It went off for us briefly. Don't know what happened. Hopefully you can still see us near us. There's the first problem of the afternoon. Good stuff.
It wasn't the mic, though.
It wasn't the mic, no. It was visual this time. So that's great. I let me know the visuals all right as well, actually, because last week I think it was an issue with YouTube because the signal was here. The signal was fine, wasn't it? Back now, Mark. So I think we did go off for a split second there.
Let's see what we're looking like live.
But I'll say on that Fulham game that it was an absolutely horrendous opening 20 minutes, even first half, to be fair. Wasn't it? We really struggled, especially defensively. And I think you've caught the exact moment there live where we went off for a minute. So that's good. At least the picture's looking alright, though, when we're back in. But that Fulham game, it was honestly one of the worst starts I've seen from us since the takeover. Yeah. We were all over the place, and Fulham were all over us. Mm-hmm. And we were lucky that they didn't capitalise on that. They were wasteful of the chances. I remember Pereiro getting in some good positions. He scuffed a header. We talked about Munoz. He hit one or two straight at Dubravka. I thought Dubravka was decent enough where he was closing down and putting the pressure on Peter, but we didn't get going at all in that first half an hour to full time, to half time, really.
Right until the end,
So we're lucky that we got away with it, and Fulham wasted chances. But then what I loved about this was the old dark art by Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall yet again, because Martin Dubravka goes down injured.
Shit out.
Not injured at all, because the best part was that the cameras pan towards the bench and you're seeing Gillespie and Karius not even warming up for Dubravka.
Oh, yeah, no.
Dubravka's down injured.
Especially not Gillespie.
Gillespie's on Tinder.
He's too busy
straight on his phone.
Game Boy Color.
What? He was just, they were sitting there chilling, nobody was warming up. And that was the funniest part. That was the best part for me. Like, they weren't even attempting to warm up. And then second time, he actually went down. This time they thought, oh, we're going to get bollocked again. Yes, we'll
see. People might realise what we're doing here.
If they didn't know.
Cameras might pan and realise, second time Dubravka's gone down, and still there's two goalkeepers on the bench. And not one of them has decided to warm up. They are, it's a little bit suspicious, that one. So I will we'll put it on for the cameras.
It was brilliant, that. Like, and I tell you what, it worked out, didn't it? Because it gave us a chance to give them a bit of a bollocking. Eddie Howe to get stuck in them and get them a bit more organised whilst on the play.
Aye. I think sometimes that's what's needed. Like, I think some people might think Eddie Howe's a little bit too soft on them. If they're not performing, which at times this season they haven't, like, it's good to see Eddie Howe getting stuck in instead of just being like Mr. Nice Guy.
Nah, no one just wants a nice guy.
Yeah, sometimes you want like a Fergie giving you the hairdryer treatment. I think it's like kick up the arse. Like, some people might see it as a negative, like being too hard on the players, but yeah, if you're getting 100 grand a week, then fucking toughen up, Buttercup. If you didn't like it, fucking get the hell out of the kitchen.
Well, what was interesting was Bruno saying at full time, you know, he credited Eddie Howe with his goal and with that win, because he said he literally did get stuck right into them at half time and let them know that this isn't the Newcastle United that we are.
Yeah.
Eddie Howe said to them that, where's the intensity? You know, where's the press? Nobody's given enough for the shirt, and you could see the difference as soon as the second half started.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely looked a lot better. The awful start, really poor. Sometimes the half-time break's just what you need, as long as you're not down. Like, if you went in, like, if you conceded in, like, the 45th minute, and it changes things. I suppose it depends the other way, and all. Even if you go 1-0 up before half time, sometimes it can mask a bad performance. So the manager will be like, "Oh well, we're winning, so Terry, just keep it up." Like,
true, right?
Really, like, no, you need to pull a finger out. But maybe it's going 1-0 down might spur them on. Like, that might be like give the manager a little bit of extra confidence to go out and be like, "How? Pull a finger out, lads! Like, this is shocking. Mm. Like, it was bad before we were 1-0 down. Now we're 1-0 down. It looks like a mountain to climb." So, yeah, 0-0 was an okay place to be going in at half-time.
It was like a lucky place to be.
It's away as well. Like Fulham can be a tricky team. So, just to keep them out, keep Munoz, who has been the informed striker in the Premier League over the last few weeks. Let's say he missed a couple of chances. I think we're lucky. Got away with one. But so to get the 0-0 into the dressing room at half-time, then, yeah, it was good for them to get in Eddie Howe and Jason Tindall, get into that Riaz and be like,
"Howie, lads.
Sort it out, man.
And they did sort it out. What I will say before we talk about us sorting it out and getting the goals, well, we did score two. We'd only got one given in the end. Was I thought Isak had an off day on Saturday. Poor first touches. He wasn't getting, obviously, loads of service, but when he did, he just seemed to be off the pace for me. On Saturday, he was sloppy, shall we say.
It seemed to be one of them games, like, we sort of had, like, November, December time where it's like, when we had loads and loads of games, like, we haven't really had that many games recently. It's just been like pretty much every Saturday, is like what you expect in the Premier League. It just did seem like a bit of fatigue. I don't know if the injuries have played into it. Like, we've lost whoever else in recent weeks or whatever. Like, Gordon suspended, and who else has gone out? Like, Tino, Miggy.
Trippier's still not back. Obviously, we lost Lascelles after losing.
Lascelles, that's who I was thinking of. And we know, like, Longstaff's been playing injured. So I think, like, we're getting to the back end of the season now where the likes of Longstaff have played pretty much every minute of pretty much every game this season.
Yeah.
Known fine well that he's been injured for weeks. So, yeah, like, fatigue probably is setting in now. And we're going to talk soon about, like, the remaining fixtures and where we can finish at the end of the season, but the sooner we can get people like Trippier and stuff back, the better. Like, I don't even know who's due to come back. We know Joe Linton's probably going to be out for the rest of the season. We know
good news on him soon, though.
We know Lascelles and Botman are. Hopefully Wilson and Pope can be back soon. Willock, he went off injured again.
He's not the same.
Like,
as he went off the
game. That's just a lot of fatigue, a lot of injuries, just a lot of, like, uncertainty. Maybe it's a bit of an unsettled camp, do you reckon, maybe? Maybe that's why, like I said, Fulham's a good team, especially away, in good form. Smashed Fulham last week. Like, it's a hard place to go, but especially, I think if you are, like, just need, like, a week off, like, it's not like you can, like, phone in sick at work. Like, I'm kind of coming the day, Nish. Like, come and do this next week.
Unless you're Mark Gillespie.
Unless you're Mark Gillespie. He's had the last 3 years off. I think maybe fatigue is just sitting in a little bit, and these injuries obviously aren't helping. Like suspensions, like Gordon's stupid red card against West Ham. just, he didn't need that, man. Like Bruno's yellow card. I kind of get it. He's fucking paid the ref off him. Like,
I think it's after Spurs this weekend. It's finally done, isn't it?
Is that the last one? I'm not sure. Because that's been pending for it. Like, Bruno's the kind of player that gets yellow cards. Like, pretty much every other game, you can put him on your bet build and pretty much guarantee the yellow card. But how many games is it now that he's gone for that? It must be like since February or something.
I think I'm surprised that the Premier League teams haven't started a conspiracy against us. Yeah. Like, you know, the Saudis are paying off the
men. That's paying people off again, is it?
Because it's unbelievable how he's lasted this long.
Absolutely
unbelievable.
But hopefully he does get one past Tottenham, and hopefully, as you say, it is like the kind of cut-off point. Hopefully that them yellow cards are rescinded after the Spurs game and he gets away with it scot-free. Because we can't really afford to lose Bruno at this point, because Longstaff's been playing far too injured. No Tonali, Joe Linton, Miley's out.
Willock's
picked up an injury. Anderson's just come back into the team. Like, who the hell we're going to play? Like, if Bruno's out, who's the game after Spurs? Who we got next?
Thankfully, you're on about 4-6, but thankfully we do have a week and a half off after Spurs.
Oh, we do.
Should have been playing Palace next weekend, but because of Palace, Man United, but because of them being in the FA Cup.
And Sheffield the week after.
It's been thingied. So then we've got Palace midweek and then Sheffield.
So say Bruno gets suspended for the Sheffield game and nobody's back. Who are we playing? Longstaff.
I mean, Longstaff, Anderson, and who else is the other midfielder? We haven't got one.
That's it. Everyone's injured.
If we haven't got Willock, then either.
Nay Willock, nay Bruno, Joe Linton, Tonali. That's it.
You'd have to put maybe
get Shara in that DM role, like everyone's been banging on about for the past 4 years.
Or you'd have to maybe put it when Miggy used to drop into like a left centre midfield role. He did that once.
Gordon started there against Chelsea last game of last season, didn't he? I think was it Gordon, Bruno, and Almiron, the midfield three against Chelsea last game of the season?
Because the only other option would be obviously have a Joe White, one of the youngins, or something in there, wouldn't it? So I don't like the thought of that.
So fingers crossed he gets through it, but hopefully Willock can be back by then. Like, they've got 2 weeks off.
You'd hope so. But when he came off again, and Eddie Howe said he hasn't quite recovered yet, it shows again that we're playing players for injuries because we haven't got another choice.
What do you mean, like, he hasn't recovered yet? Like, he's played for the last, what, 3-4 games?
I know. And you see, he's former shadow of himself, though. Complete former shadow of himself.
His first couple of games when he came back, he was our age, but the last couple, he has looked a bit sluggish.
Caught up with him. He hasn't got that energy that everyone was desperate to see back, wasn't he? Missing his gaunt runs.
He's got pace, like, and he's got one of them most, like, underrated paces in the Premier League. Like, he can shift. Like, once he gets on the ball and he's running down that left-hand side, like, he can move. Like, but yeah, he hasn't really shown much of that. Well, at all this season, because he's been injured for most of it.
I remember seeing him at Old Trafford in the Cup, and he scored, and he was unreal that day, and then that's literally the only thing he's done all season. It's a shame, and because you'd hope maybe he's fit enough for Spurs, because I remember last year against Spurs, that 6-1, he was unreal. That ball, some of the passes he was playing to Isak, and getting amongst himself as well, so that's hope that he's at least good enough to make some sort of impact, because what Newcastle have missed massively, what were missed against Everton was the bench, wasn't it, man? Like, there's no options off the bench. And even at Fulham, bringing on Harvey Barnes changed it again. Bringing something different, bringing some spark to the side down
I'm
the
surprised
left.
He hasn't been starting, to be fair.
Since
he's came back, like, he's looked good. Not just the two Fulham goals. He scored one 2 weeks before that. Who did he score? His first game back. Luton, I scored against Luton on his first game back. Two against West Ham. He is a class player.
I think he's maybe keeping him just so he does have an option off the bench, just so he does have some sort of impact. But against Spurs, where Spurs could easily take a couple of goals lead, they're on fire this season, but you want to be starting him, because I think Murphy now he hasn't been great the last couple of games.
I think Eddie Howe's just a bit unsure of who to start on the right, because I think Gordon and Barnes are both better on the left. Almiron and Murphy are his only really right wingers, and we spoke about it nearly every week that we need one in the summer. We should have signed one last summer, but they can both play that because they're both actually right-footed. It's probably more of a natural position for them. Like, I know they're both like cutting in and having a shot, but they're both right-footed players. It can't be that much of an adjustment. It's not like asking a striker to play a goalkeeper. It's pretty much the same fucking position, just on the different side of the field. Like,
I think Gordon, the question was, would he be as effective from the right that he has been on the left, because obviously majority of his goals have been the cutting out there against the City, the Sheffield United.
That's why Barnes is better on the left, because he's good at that.
Because he did that for the winner against West Ham, didn't he?
Yeah.
But to be fair to Gordon, I thought he looked good against Fulham on the right as well. And he did actually play a lovely floated ball in, for the Shaw goal. That was no doubt a VAR. He did a lovely chip ball in. We'll talk about that now. Then, you know, the VAR decision to rule out Shaw's goal. Mm-hmm. Gordon from the right, dinks one in. Bain and Bassey go up. Bain and Bassey go up together.
Yeah.
Bain does maybe get a little bit of a nudge, but the ball's already gone, man, isn't it?
Yeah, no, it's a harsh one. Like, I think VAR always looks worse. Like, slow motion always looks worse because I think Bain's, like, extended his hand. So he's, like, kind of straight-armed, looks like he's shoved Bassey when he didn't really. Like, it is soft, but I can see why VAR's give it, but I still don't agree with it. I think it's still a bit of a soft and shit call.
Mm.
But I think when you look at it in slow motion, you see, like, the shove. It's not a shove, but that's how it looks in slow motion. So I think that's why it's being given. It definitely looks worse on camera than I think it actually was. So, yeah, I think Fulham got lucky with that one, like, definitely.
Well, not one of them complained, which was the thing that pissed me off. One of them complained. Bassey's in the goal, picks himself up. They're all going back to the centre circle, ready to start the game. And that's what it is, though. Like, VAR makes it worse because it's in slow motion. It makes it everything
that's
look
not how the game is played.
It pisses me off when the ref goes over and you know the outcome is going to be.
Yeah, I think once I seen, like, Burns, like, straight arm, I was thinking, I think this might be taken off.
Which was a shame because for me, it didn't affect the goal. It didn't stop.
Nah. Anyone? Then, like, Burn just beat him straight up. Like.
And the balls beat both of them. Way above them. So I thought that was a crap decision, and it goes back to VAR. You know, for you, is it doing more harm than good these days, or do you still have faith in the system, or what would you do?
I was in favour of VAR even before it came in, like, before there was even talks of VAR. Like, I was ahead of the game. I was saying, like, we need something, like, to come in, because, like the Lampard goal against Germany in the World Cup, like, things like that. Like, that
the
was
ref got the watch for that now.
That was before goal line technology, and goal line technology came in long before VAR. But, like, like offsides and dodgy things like red cards. Like, I always thought, like, they should bring something in because every other sport has it. Like, American football has it. Like, tennis, cricket, every sport pretty much has, like,
and seems to use it well.
Yeah, everyone else knows how to use it. But when did VAR even come in? Was it 2018? Was it the World Cup?
And it was actually Harry at the World Cup.
Loads Everyone of penalties like, oh, were given. Like, the penalties were soft.
The last World Cup, sorry, was good.
The 2018 World Cup, which, if that was the first time, I can't remember. But loads of penalties were given. Like, it was a bit of shit, but it made it more entertaining. But I think, like I was saying last week, I don't like it because, like, for offsides, like the minimal calls, like when it's zooming in, just trying to find, like, hair,
Isaac's, like, elbow hair against Evan.
Like, I hate calls like that because, like I said, it's like I was saying last week, it's meant to clear and obvious errors. And if you're drawing a line, zooming in, trying to find like an elbow hair just straying over the line, like, it's not clear and obvious, like, you're clutching at straws. So it's just a system that doesn't work. And I think referees are leaning towards it. I think referees have got softer because they've got that backup. Like, I think they're afraid to make a call in case they get it wrong. And just be like, oh, well, we'll just net VAR, have a look at it. Like, so, yeah, it doesn't work. I don't like it. Sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. But when it goes against you, like the Burn one, like, it just makes you realise, like, it's just soft as shit. Mm. Like, it's not sorting out the clear and obvious errors like it said that it was going to when it was introduced. And what is it now, 6 years later, we've had VAR and it's still shit. Like, it still hasn't been fixed. The European one I like the goal line, the offside one in the Champions League, that looks mint. Like, that really works because it shows you, like the graphic that they use. Like, I think they use it a couple of times. Like,
4D sort of image.
Yeah, was it PSG? Was it Burns' goal against PSG? Like, that went to VAR, and, like, it shows you, like, that technology works. So why don't you have it in the Premier League?
Strange,
like, so some people can use it, but we just don't do shit in the Premier League.
What do you think what has to change, and what would... Because I wouldn't really watch American football. You clearly do.
What makes you
say that? That I already know. But... So they use it in their game. What are they doing right that we're doing wrong then? What can we take from them? Maybe or take from, because loads of people have suggested things like they're doing rugby or cricket, or can we get an appeal system in there, or can we give a thing where you get a time limit to maybe make the decision? Or
I think time limits need to come into it. Like, I don't think they really have that in the NFL, but what they do have is, like, an appeal thing. So in each half, like, the head coach can throw a challenge flag, so they've got, like, a red flag in that pocket. And if they say something that they don't like, they can throw that flag and get it looked at.
So each team gets one of them each quarter, did you say?
Each half. Yeah. So each two quarters, you can, like, throw a challenge flag. I think they've recently changed the rules on us. Like, they change the rules every year, but I can't remember what they've changed it to. But obviously, we don't get timeouts. They do.
So unless you already house Dark Arts.
Unless you already have. He gets timeouts. Fergie time.
He gets timeouts.
But yeah, if you throw the challenge flag and the decision's upheld, then you lose a timeout. So it's like, kind of costs you to throw the flag if it's not worth it. So you need to be like, kind of smart about how you use it. But obviously, I don't really think that's something we can do, obviously, because we don't have timeouts. But I don't really know what VAR can do, like what like the NFL are doing. I think it can take a bit of time. Like the NFL do take a little bit of time to look at things, which is one of the things that pisses people off about VAR in the first place. Like VAR, like that's one thing that I would say about VAR. Like going back again to clear and obvious errors, so it was to take far too long. If you look at it for like 30 seconds. If you look at it and you still kind of make your mind up within 30 seconds, then just go with the referee's original
decision. That tells you the decision, doesn't it?
Yeah.
If you're taking too long, you're,
it's not clear and obvious. If you're taking that long, then it's not clear and obvious. Mm. Like, just go with the referee's initial decision. And that's why I think referees need to be, get their balls back. Aye. Like, get your Pierluigi Colinas. Like,
takes away too much power now, doesn't it?
Yeah, it does. So the referee needs to have the balls, make a decision. Yeah, VAR can go into his ear and be like, oh, we're not too sure about that. Let's have a look at it. And then, yeah, 30 seconds. If you haven't decided in 30 seconds, then go with the referee's initial decision. Crack on. Mm. Move on. Stop whinging about it.
Aye. That's the thing, though, now, like, the American sports and obviously a lot more time and stop, start and stuff. We've already seen, bloody hell, especially in Newcastle games lately. And I think this is a contribution towards the injuries this year, is the amount of added time.
Yeah,
Fulham had 9 minutes at Craven Cottage.
I think it was four minutes in the first half
of Scottish time. So there's another 15 minutes, man. Yeah. Added on.
So I know they said they were going to do like the last back end of last season because I think they figured out that the ball was only in play for was it like 53 minutes or something in a game.
All the fans were hammering us for that, weren't they?
Yeah. So I kind of get that aspect of it because yeah, like the game should be 90 minutes and. Again, like to the NFL, like people say it's two stop start, but like you can stop the clock, like so you get your game time, like the play clock can run just the kind of same as it does in basketball with like the shot clock, like the clock can run so the time can still run out while you're deciding what play you want to run, but ultimately like the time does stop, so you get your time, like 15 minute quarters, you get your play time, whereas in football you get your 90 minutes, but how much is actually played because the clock ticks and you used to have maybe 3, 4, 5 minutes added on, but still like the ball's only really in play for like 50 odd minutes.
Right.
So you're not getting your full 90 minutes. So yeah, I think it is slowing the game down a little bit. So that's why I get that adding this time on, but you could use like the NFL and stop the clock. Like make sure you get 90 minutes. If the ball goes out and like people can't time waste, like people like taking times with throw-ins and go like I know like when you're losing if it's like 1-0 and the goalkeeper's taking fucking 4 minutes to take a goal kick, like the fans can get on their back, like just stop the clock, like time waste all you like, we're gonna play 90 minutes. So I think that's something that they could look into, but I think like the NFL do look at things, like there has been like an announcement of rule changes every year, they look at things and all the owners can propose rules. And then it goes to all the other owners and it has to be like a majority decision is if it gets passed. So rules change every year in the NFL. But I think football can be too stubborn. I think we're too old school to allow change. We don't want change. Like, say VAR's been in for 6 years and we still didn't make it.
Because it's all these old big wigs in FA and in London managers sitting there just smoking cigars, drinking tea still, you know what I mean?
Not thinking about it. Stuff. Like, nah, like people don't like change. Like with like the Europa, the Super League bollocks, like and even changing to the Champions League format.
I
don't want the Champions League to change. Like it's the best competition, club competition in the world, and has been for about 100 years. So why are you changing it? I think because people want to try and move with the times, but when it comes to like rule changes, like a stop clock or things like that, like people didn't want to hear us. Like they just want to let referees ruin the game, basically.
Well, thankfully they didn't ruin the game in the end because Bruno Guimarães stepped up on his 100th appearance and smashed it into the back of the net to give Newcastle United the 1-0 win. Bruno's 100th goal. 100th goal.
Appearance.
Hopefully he gets 100 goals and thousands of appearances. But in those 100 appearances, to be fair, he's got 14 goals, 13 assists. He's only ever missed 7 games in Newcastle United.
Yeah.
And in those 7 games...
Good. 3 of them were before the final.
We've won none. Zeros. Every game Bruno's missed, we've lost. really? How much of a stat does that prove how important he is to the team?
Yeah, well, we're in shit form before the cup final because we were crapping our pants a little bit, weren't we? Because we lost all them three games after the Liverpool red card. Was it Liverpool?
No,
it
was Liverpool was where Pope got sent off.
Oh, no, it was Southampton. Southampton in the semi-final, wasn't it? Semi-final, second leg, he got sent off. So I missed Liverpool and a couple of other games before that.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know what the other four games would have been that he's missed. I think he had a couple of injuries last season, I think. I don't know what games they were. But, yeah, he is obviously important to us. Like, whenever he's not playing, I think we do look a lesser team. I think we'll figure that out, like, before the cup final. Like, them three games, like, we're void in midfield. And especially without, like, Tonali and Joe Linton, like, without Bruno, as we were saying before, like, if you got the booking against Tottenham and missed the Sheffield game, like, we'd be fucked. Mm. Like, he's just, like, they say he's missed 7 games out of 107. Like, goes to show you that he's fit. He's not a Joe Willock. He's not a...
Thankfully.
He's not a Callum Wilson or anyone that can pick up injuries. Like, he'll play on. He's even Sean Longstaff, like... He's playing injured, but you can tell. If Bruno's playing injured, you cannot tell because he's still performing to a high level.
Mm.
So, yeah, top-class action. That's why we need to make sure that he's here next season. We cannot be accepting any 100 million-plus bids from anyone, whoever wants him. Fuck off. We don't want your money.
I mean, we do. Well, we do need it. Don't want it.
If you want to give worse, but, yeah. If you want to buy Bruno for 120 million and loan him back for the next 10 years, that'd be lovely. Thank you.
Do you think though that Darren Eales and new owners would have the same opinion? Whereas if someone did come in with that 100 million release clause that he's apparently got, that they would be like, "Oh, actually, he's too invaluable for us. We need to keep him." Or would they look at that and think for amortization and FFP, and you can end up spending triple that? Will it be worth it? Because at the same time, though, and Eddie Howe said it. There's not many Brunos in world football.
No.
And that's why we'll go for big bucks. And his agent was spotted at a PSG game the other day.
Yeah,
and he's good. Heavy linked with PSG. But to be fair, that could be anything. I mean,
agent's probably got into that.
More players on his books than not just Bruno.
Top class agents of players all over the world. 20, so, so most likely got a client in
he's probably watching one of his clients
play. Yeah, he's probably got a back deal of it.
So he was there in Paris, but... Oh man, just after that game, we've always said we need to keep and build a team around him. But after that, it just emphasizes it more than it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I don't really know the details of the contract. So if he has got a £100 million release clause in his contract and someone comes along and triggers it, I don't know that they can do anything about it. I don't know if they can say.
Maybe a player, they mind it, aye?
Yeah, like I don't know if they can say, like, I don't know if we want to do that or not. Like, I don't really think they've got a choice. It's like Chris Wood. Like, Burnley didn't want to sell Chris Wood, they were, but we released his clause. Because was it Daishi he was still the manager at that point? Like, he was bitching and moaning about that, wasn't he?
Cost him relegation, to be fair, so he's ready to bitch and moan about
it. Oh, yeah. cost him the job, not to be fair.
Hey, what is it?
He didn't even see out the season. He got sacked before the end of the season.
Tell you what, now, though, Woody's been on some more. Yeah, apart from that chance he missed the other day, which is Chris Wood, I know, where he smashed off the post 2 yards out. But I think he's the third... Is he the third or one of the top highest goal scorers in the league this season? Especially permanent goal ratio. He scored
goal of the game. Well, he scored 3 against us.
He scored like 13 or 14 games. Goals this season, man. He's on fire. Absolutely on fire.
Yeah, that's why I said we should have kept him. But anyway,
again, bargain.
Going back to Bruno. Yeah, we shouldn't sell Chris Wood, but that's another story.
But the injuries we could have done with him.
Yeah, obviously we don't want to sell Bruno, but yeah, if the 100 million plus offer comes in. But then again, like you say, if there's a release clause, no one's going to have to pay it over 100.
No.
Like, we would want 120 plus if we could.
Now you
want
to give him a new contract and get the release clause
if there's a release clause of 100, then who the fuck would pay that? Like, you're only going to have to pay 100 maximum.
Mm.
Like, someone might be trying to cheat you and say, oh, we'll come in with 80, 90, just to say, like just kind of tease you a little bit. Like, we'll come up to 100 if we're going to have it. But if you want to negotiate with them at 80 to 90, then so be it. But... yeah, it's going to have to be whatever the release clause is. If it's bang on 100 million, if someone comes along and triggers it, then we're knackered. But hopefully not, because it would be definitely be a shame to lose him. And you can tell that he doesn't want to go. Like, everything that he's said in his recent press conferences about his future tells you that he's happy here and he wants to build something here. Like, I get that, like, because Newcastle is like a project. Like, some players, they'll eat that shit up. Like, it is like something to get excited about. Like, everyone plays for different reasons. It could be financial. It could be for trophies. If you want trophies, then being at Newcastle right now probably isn't the place for you. If you want to go to Real Madrid, Man City, then crack on, see you later. If you want money, go to Saudi Arabia, go wherever you want. But Newcastle's appealing to some players that want to get their teeth sunk into summer because it is a project and most likely long term. So like that's why Bruno came. Like he could have like and Trippier, they could have stayed and fought in the top three, top four of France and Spain, and played Champions League football. Easy, no worries, piece of piss. Well, now they came to Newcastle for a project, something exciting. And yeah, I think more and more people will do that. Hopefully the long-term vision doesn't take too long to get a hold of. Like we've already played Champions League football, and that's why Bruno would have come long-term. He probably didn't think he was going to play it this season. But I think that's just a taster. Like, he's played Champions League football, and he's played in the cup final at Wembley. That's just a taster. He's going to want more. And in, I don't know, 3 years, 2 years, he can go and crack on with another adventure if this is, if he's got bored of us or if we've achieved what we want to achieve. Like, he might want a new challenge, and fair play. Everyone else probably does. But like, I think that's why Newcastle is such like a sexy thing to do, because it's different. It's not just going to Man City and just win the league every year. Harry Class Irons.
I try to watch their Netflix program. They're neat. I watched the first 10 minutes. I was just so bored.
Nah.
It was great because they showed the Newcastle 3-3 draw.
Oh, did they?
So that was nice. But then after that, every week, they just slapped them teams.
I watched...
And I was just like, oh, this is really
I think I watched
boring.
The first couple of episodes when they'd done All or Nothing a couple of seasons ago. But again, I think other than just watching Guardiola at half-time, like, it was just a bit boring.
He just flapped his hands a bit all the time and just telling them how much he loves them. That's how he was dealing this new Netflix one.
I wasn't really that bothered about that.
The Spurs All or Nothing was class, though, because of Josie on it.
Also Dele lockdown and all. Dele Alli, Danny Rose. Danny Rose got a bollocking.
I mean, it may get good, but I think unless you're a Man City fan, you just get bored of seeing them win 6-0 every week. So I'll just say I've had enough of this. And then obviously you know that it's the treble winning season, so it's just everything's...
Yeah, you know it's going to come.
It's just everything's just them, just so happy and winning all the time. It's just to the end. But Bruno, obviously Man City are linked with him. They're also linked with Paqueta. Apparently they've made big moves on him the day, if you believe Twitter. So probably don't. But obviously they did look at signing him in the last window, Paqueta. So hopefully they go for him over Bruno. Because
hopefully.
The thing is with Bruno, right, you can see how much he loves it here. And he gets it. And I don't think you want to. I think he should and he will stay for at least another year. Because you mentioned he's had tasters and it is an exciting project. And now, if these new FFP rules come in where obviously the restrictions are going to be taken away, there's not going to be points deductions anymore, and there's just going to be big fines. We hope that's going to be the case for us anyways. Then again, that gives us a big chance of increasing everyone's wages like they have done, and then obviously keeping a hold of our best players and buying more than when we've been restrained. Because if you look at it for me, Bruno, right, PSG, I'm not rating that move at all. I know he loves Paris, his missus loves Paris, but it's a shit league, man. It really is. It's terrible league.
Yeah.
I'd rather watch a championship all day long. It's way more entertaining. There's more
even PSG, I don't feel are exciting anymore.
I was there. I was there.
That Messi for a season. They weren't even that good. Like, they had Sergio Ramos for a season.
The Dean opposite now, all the young ones on it.
Neymar's not there, but yeah, it's just not exciting. Like, that that Emery, who we played against, he's class.
Emery and Koulibaly and that, they're trying to bring through the youngins.
Yeah,
but I
just don't really give a shit about PSG. And like I said, the French league's shite. I think it did get rated, whoever does it every season, like someone like rates like these leagues, and they like fell out of the top five.
Easily?
I think even the championships rate higher.
Well, honestly, championships way more competitive and exciting.
Championships better than the French league. Like, yes, you've got PSG class team in Champions League. They could go all the way. I think we smashed them, but... that's the thing, and now like we could quite easily have beaten them twice. Like, that just goes to tell you, like, they're the sweethearts of France. Like, how many years in a row have they won it? Like,
I think he broke the mold, didn't he? When was it Bottom? Was it Lille?
Lille won it a couple of years ago, but other than that, they've won it about nine.
Nine
of the last 10 years.
But I'd forgive Bruno of like a Real Madrid or a Barca or something. I came in from a huge club. Wins everything, but your PSGs and even Man City, you think, you're already in the Prem, Bruno, and now you're going to win the league, and that was City probably. But at the same time, he's not going to be as low tier, he's not going to get the passion. Our fans are way better.
Yeah.
And you've seen midfielders go, and obviously Bruno's levels above your likes of your Calvin Phillips and that, but Calvin Phillips went there, highly rated, 50 odd million, flopped, like in and out of the team. You know that you're going to get
like how many times is like, I know Grealish have injuries, but 100 million.
Grealish barely been picked this season.
Yeah, 100 million. Yeah, he's had injuries, but even when he hasn't, like, he hasn't really been great. He's
dropped out the England squad.
Is this his second season at City or his third?
Third now, I think.
Third,
I
didn't know.
No.
He's won trophies in Hamad Almiron, but no, well done. Class.
Nah, stay Bruno, man. Gotta stay. Who doesn't stay this summer? We'll finish off on these two, and this sums up the injury crisis. Still at tune.
Still
at Fulham. Paul Dunn, Matt Ritchie came on as substitutes. Thankfully, though, no drama this time.
All it is. late subs now.
No drama, no mistakes.
I did shit myself when I seen Dummett coming on because I know it was late, but it's Dummett.
Well, I'd see what he'd done 4 days previously.
And especially after the Everton midweek game. Yeah, I did. Because it's only 1-0. Like, if we had like a couple of goal advantage, then I would have been irate about it. But it was only 1-0. I was like, you know,
oh, I got a repeat. Can I get a rewind? I was thinking, Divin, bring down Munoz in the box, please, Dummett.
Yeah, I just had a really bad feel. My heart sank when I seen Dummett come. I was like, oh,
especially
shit.
When I seen 9 minutes out of it on.
Oh, yeah.
I thought he's going to bring down Willian, yeah. He'll put the smallest, oldest beyond the pitch to bring down.
Probably will. I really talked about absolutely
with Ashley Young. But thankfully, we held on to that 1-0 win. And it was a great week for Newcastle in the end, where we got 7 points out of a possible 9.
Yeah.
The other United, Manchester United, only got 1 point out of 9. And that was, to be fair, against Liverpool. So they flopped a couple of results, which has left sixth place wide open.
Wait.
So we're only 2 points off, I believe, sixth place now. And we have to go to Old Trafford and play them. So that gives us a glorious opportunity to steal Europa League sixth place off the Red Devils. How beautiful would that be? And how mental would it be considering the season we've had?
Yeah, and remind us in a bit because I had something that I wanted to bring up here. But I think like any sort of European football after the season that we've had would be an achievement, and I think we should celebrate Europa League. Like, well,
definitely.
Like, what positions is it? Like, typically it's fifth, sixth, and is it seventh, or is it just fifth and sixth that get it?
I think it's fifth and sixth, but this year
depending
it's all
on
changed,
the clubs. Like, yeah, I think if City win the Champions League and Liverpool win the Europa, then it Allianz ticks up. Like, anyone can get it. Like, eighth place could maybe get you in ninth at your Conference League.
It's all permutations, isn't it? As long as Chelsea don't win the FA Cup as well, because everyone else is already qualified as well.
Yeah,
so
that's true.
At the minute, I think fifth would get Champions League, sixth and seventh would get Europa, and eighth would get Conference.
Yeah, but sixth at least is going to guarantee you Europa. It's not, you're not going to get Conference League finishing sixth.
No.
So, yeah, wherever we're finishing, we get Europa League, I'm more than happy with that. So, like I said, even if it's seventh and we somehow managed to get it down to a knock by effect by Liverpool winning the Europa or whatever it is, I'll absolutely take that. Like, so it has been a hard season. It's been a difficult season. So I think Europa League's Europa League's all level. Like, we've outdone myself by getting Champions League last season. And we've done well. We've done myself proud in the Champions League. And I know a lot of people might laugh at them, like, yeah, you finished bottom. but that doesn't tell you the story. I'm sure we're even top of the league. Like, at the time when Joe Linton scored against AC and we're 1-0 up, were we not top of that group at that time?
Yeah, I think
PSG
second,
and Dortmund.
Dortmund would have been top because they were fine, weren't they?
Yeah, at that time we were 1-0 up and PSG and Dortmund were 0-0. So I thought we were top, but regardless, we were top at one point. I think after the first two games we were top because it was AC Milan, a point, and then PSG. That was the second game, wasn't it? So we're 4 points out of six in my first two games.
Great start,
We absolutely smashed the Champions League. Like, we finished bottom of it, but
group of death, though.
Yeah, absolute group of death.
But what Man U did, finish bottom of their group that had Copenhagen in it.
Yeah, could quite easily have done well. So, yeah, I think the Europa League's our level. And I think we could go far. Regardless of whatever group we got in the Champions League, and I know we did get the group of death, even though we've done really, really well. But we're never going to go far.
No.
But in the Europa, I really feel like that's all level. And we could push quarter semi-final easily.
I think we could. I think we'll have a great run. And even if it was Conference League, look at what West Ham did with
Metro.
But I think, definitely. But I think now we've got to be looking at Europa League, really. Even if we don't close down Man U in sixth and seventh is good enough, then we should make seventh our own now. We've still got that game in hand on West Ham, so it could be ours. Obviously, the lead equalizer against Everton was a bit of a bummer.
Ball is completely in our court.
7 games to go. Win the games. It's ours because of the way the fixtures are. You've got them up there, Man U and Newcastle's. But Newcastle in 8th on 47. Man United in 6th on 49. West Ham 48th. But we've got a game in hand on West Ham. And we also do play Man U at Old Trafford. So that one could be the decider. The thing with Man U is you never know what you're going to get there. Draw against Liverpool.
So
then they get beat off Chelsea. And then, you know, if we look at Man U's fixtures, got Bournemouth away. I wouldn't be surprised if they got beat there.
They've
got three easy games.
Palace have been crap three games to four games. Yeah, then Arsenal's their only hard team.
Thing is, though, Arsenal
get beat. But I think Bournemouth, we just need, if we beat them, And hopefully they do have a couple of slip-ups, because like I said, they've been shite. Hopefully Arsenal smash them.
The thing with Arsenal is that Man United at Old Trafford, in the big games, we've seen against Liverpool and that. We've seen against Man City as well. Oh. They'll turn up. They'll probably get a draw against Arsenal, but get beat off Bournemouth. That's the kind of thing that they do.
Think the game we've got, which is still to be decided yet, isn't on that list there. That's the most important one, because we've got a similar run in. Like, we've got Palace, Sheffield and Burnley as well, just in opposite order, and Brighton. So we've pretty much got the same schedule. We've got Spurs, they've got Arsenal, we've got Brentford, they've got Bournemouth. So it's a pretty identical list, isn't it? So I think that game against us is potentially like a sixth place final, obviously depending on West Ham. So. But I think we're going to beat out West Ham. So yeah, I think sixth place is only in our own hands. Like, just don't worry about West Ham or Man United. Just win our games that we've got left, starting with Spurs. Like, that's the big thing, because they've got Arsenal's second last game. Their run-in's a piece of piss up until there. Whereas we've got Spurs first, which is our hardest game. But whenever that Man United game is, that's going to be huge. And like I said, we just need to do our business by beating Palace, Sheffield and Burnley.
It's a joke how it still hasn't been announced, that game. The season finishes in 5 weeks. It's going to be like a Wednesday night in and
out. Oh, yeah, it's going to be midweek.
But someone made a good point there. She was in the chat as well. West Ham have Europe, so they might fade away. True. But I don't think they'll be in Europe for very long, because I think they've got Bayer Leverkusen in the quarters, haven't they, on Thursday night? I think they've got Bayer Leverkusen. So I think Xabi Alonso will be knocking out Moise right there. Like, but it's a good point. Obviously, they've got more games. And obviously, Man United have got the cup as well. Got a semi-final, haven't they?
True.
Against Chelsea, which you'd expect them to... Well, again, I said Chelsea's beat them last week, so you can't expect anything in that one. But if they get through, then they'll have another game, they'll have a cup final to focus on. So that would definitely help us, to be fair. I hope Man U get through. So they've got a final at Wembley to focus
more
on.
More games, more distractions, yeah.
And then they get it that way anyway. So, but I'm buzzing that we're even in the mix for a sixth place finish after the season we've had, man. I think that's an unbelievable place to be. And again, how does that correlate for you compared to last season achievements? Obviously,
well, that was the thing that I wanted to bring up. That was what I was going to put in. So yeah, nice little segue into that one.
Segue.
So I was going to ask you that, like, in comparison to last season, would you see, if we finished sixth and got Europa League, for example, would that be a bigger or, if not, on par achievement with finishing fourth last season, knowing how shit of a season that we've had in terms of injuries, more games, Champions League, pressure of trying to get back to a cup final and doing one better, having Sunderland, like the group of death, like injuries, suspensions. Like, this season's been a fucking shit show compared to last year. And if we finish sixth ahead of Man United and get Europa League, like, and I know a lot of fans have been whinging, the Eddie Out Brigade can fuck clean off if we finish sixth.
Oh, no, honestly.
Because sixth place with this season that we've had is a mega achievement.
No one else could do better, Tanya. Yeah. Say it on Sky, nobody else. And answer your question, I think it would be definitely more impressive, to be honest.
Yeah.
Because fourth last year, we were in third for loads of the season.
Yeah,
good that we didn't finish above Man U last year.
Because
we haven't finished above them in obviously absolutely forever. So
I think we were probably better throughout the season.
Oh, definitely were.
Especially this season.
We definitely were. So if we get sixth, we've had an injured 11, but the all season is getting better than the fit 11.
Well, big signing hasn't played all yet.
Well, the big money Tonali deal hasn't worked out. The mad cup draws of City away in the cup after getting Chelsea and Man U. Yeah,
City, United, Chelsea, City again. Sunderland's a big game.
Exactly. Like, made that look easy now.
Fulham's probably been the easiest draw we've had. Fulham's a good team.
And obviously we mentioned the group of death in Champions League. So it couldn't have went any harder this season, Freddie Howe. It couldn't have been more difficult.
Mad season. I hope nothing's been confirmed yet, and that probably hasn't been, but I hope there's been a documentary made this season.
Oh, man.
I hope Amazon's been following up with it this season, because that documentary would be class.
I wish they have, but I don't think they have. Because you've seen them all over the place last
season. You can tell it was just a one-off that season, but now
Run it back.
Last season's documentary obviously seemed to get top four, and that was amazing, but I would love for the cameras to be behind the scenes and show you like what's gone on, like with the whole Tonali thing, with the injuries, with Champions League, beating PSG, beating Sunderland. Like, this season's been a documentary in itself.
It really has.
Like, behind the...
Windy, yeah.
Behind the scenes documentary this season would just be an absolute showstopper. Like, as much as what last season finishing fourth would have been.
I agree. I think absolutely it'd be class. Some achievement if Eddie Howe could pull that off if we could get six. And just to wind up the Man U fans, it would probably get Ten Hag sacked if he isn't sacked already.
Yeah.
To be honest, we managed to get him out the door. So if I had to say to you now, Keg, will we finish above Man United in six? What's your answer?
It's a difficult one because there's a lot of if, buts, and maybes.
A lot
of games, a lot of results, things that can happen. But I believe we can. Yeah. I wouldn't put a bet on this, but I really think we can. I think it's got to start with Saturday. Beating Spurs, that's a big indication.
Yeah.
So if we can beat Spurs, then why not? Because the rest of our games are way easier than Spurs. Obviously, let's say Man United could be like a sixth place cup final. So beat Spurs, then it's just all eyes on the rest of the season. Just do our jobs. Beat Palace, Sheffield, Burnley. Brighton and Brentford can be tough games. We've got to be able to beat Brentford. Get revenge on Brighton for the embarrassment of the away game at the beginning of the season.
Awful. And they've been poor for a while now.
And Man United. That game's going to be massive. It is. Wait for it.
That's probably going to be the decider, isn't it? That one, that midweek trip to Old Trafford. Let's hope it was like the cup trip there during the week earlier in the season. I'm going to buy it. I'm going to
see. So I'm just looking. I reckon there's a little bit of a gap there. So I reckon it could be the second last game. I reckon it could be in between Brighton and Brentford. Because anywhere else is squeezing it in a little bit. Like it's obviously going to have to be squeezed in. It's going to have to be a midweek game at some point.
Aye, that Wednesday before the 11th, after the 11th, by the looks of it.
Yeah.
Let's wait and see. Let's hope we can do the job and finish above them. I'll see we'll do it, but at the same time, getting seventh would be amazing anyways. That would do the job. On to some great news today then, which is apparently Joe Linton edging ever closer to signing that new deal. The Telegraph and many others now, Fabrizio Romano, are reporting that the deal is pretty much done after positive talks this week. Steve Nixon, who did actually sign Joe Linton back in the day when he was the head scout, who's pretty much doing it now. He's been leading the talks and with the Brazilian and his representatives, and everything's going well. Everything is looking like it's about to be announced that Joe Linton will sign a new four-year deal at the Toon. Four more years of J7.
I love it.
Get in, which will make him one of the highest earners at the club.
Imagine if we had this conversation 4 years ago.
I say we are all absolutely mental and have lost the plot.
At
that time, it was like, just get rid of him for $5 million.
Everyone said that. Everyone was like, just fire him. He's the worst bet.
Fire him, Terry's contract up. The Apprentice, you're fired.
He's got club record signing, but people are more than happy to take a $40 million cut. And that was in the Mike Ashley days. That was pre-takeover. People were just like, get rid of him. He's the worst player we've ever had.
Remember when we were at Rochdale away in the cup?
Forming in the car park, doing the match reaction. Just him in that seething
orange kit. Just couldn't even dribble, couldn't shoot from 2 yards.
In the crowd, we were screaming for Elias Sorensen.
Wow. Where's he nowadays?
Last I heard, he was either playing second tier Dutch or Danish football.
Wow, bloody hell.
Christ knows. Because he was the up-and-comer. He's the one that everyone thought was going to be class. He was smashing it in the under-21s.
He was
unreal. He was on the bench that day with Tom Allen, who was Akron, maybe?
Is he,
I don't know. Maybe. Yeah, something like that. I don't know.
Gated, probably.
League 2-ish. Or, National League, I don't know. Them two were on the bench and Joe Linton was just beyond shit. Like, a lot of people had patience with him up until that point, and I didn't. Like, I'm probably always the last one. Like, I've always got patience with everyone, and I can kind of hope that everyone does well. When everyone's losing their head, like the Eddie Howe thing, like, I'm not on that board. And I think a lot of people aren't now, but at the time, like, people had long lost their patience with Joe Linton. But that game, I'm sure it was like the 2nd of January, 2nd or 3rd of January, we drove down to Rochdale. It's freezing. It's
awful.
Probably still a little bit hungover from New Year.
It's awful.
It was just absolutely awful. Who scored? Because we went 1-0 up.
Did we? Oh, it was 1-1, wasn't it?
Yeah, we went 1-0 up. Almiron scored. Almiron put 1-0 up.
Yes.
And then I think like some 39-year-old player equalised or something.
They should have won it now. They had loads of chances.
Towards the end, it was proper squeaky, but like, they were going for that winner. But we couldn't because, we were shit. Joe Linton was absolutely terrible.
Darcy Sorensen's at Esbjerg, Danish second division. Not even in the first division. It's
crazy.
God.
And he was meant to be our future. Anyway, that was pre-takeover, obviously. But I he just generally just didn't look like a footballer. Like his touch, like
nothing.
I remember someone put a good ball in from the left, and all he had to do was run onto it at the near post. But he just didn't. He was just lazy. Didn't chase anything. His touch was horrendous. Like he just looked like he couldn't be asked to be there. So that
was his body language. Really. That's what wound me up.
That was the time that I lost patience with him. But so yeah, now let's say 4 years on, talking about being the highest paid player at the club. Love. Absolutely mental. But yeah, he deserves it. From my own personal perspective, I think his weekly wage is a little bit too high, but I'm not going to get strung up on that.
What's it rumored to be now?
Was it 120?
Aye. Same as Bruno, more than Trippier, more than Isak, isn't
it? Yeah, but I think he's showing how important he is. I think him not being here, we've spoken about how shit Dan Burn's been. Julian's that proper shithouse defensive midfielder he's box to box, really. He can get forward, he's good at joining the attack, he can assist, he can score now.
Yeah. How did that bloke at Rochdale, who couldn't shoot from 2 yards out, score that goal against AC Milan?
And that volley, oh my days.
God almighty, man. What, I don't know, what's this? This needs investigated, to be honest.
That's it. Eddie Howe's
transformation.
Eddie Howe deserves a job for life for what he's done to Joe Linton.
Aye, literally. Joe Linton should be paying him 120 grand a week.
Yeah, who should get 120 grand a week? Kieran Clarke,
aye. He should be on a compensation package or something,
shouldn't
he?
Joe Linton should be giving him a little backhander. Yeah,
set for life.
There's 20 grand there. Right. Just for sorting me out. That red card against Norwich absolutely changed my career.
Transforming my life. And now he's getting Brazil games and everything. Do you know what I mean?
Absolutely deserves it. So, yeah, I think 120 grand's a little bit too much, but he's invaluable. He's a huge part of this team. Well, I'm missing him dearly now. So whatever keeps him here, if he was going to get other better offers elsewhere. Was he out of contract this summer? Next summer.
So it was people could come in and then get an obligation, couldn't I get him for free?
Yeah, I'll get him
6 months, cheaply, 9 months.
Just keeping him here. Whatever contract it is, it doesn't fucking matter. Just make sure that he's here. So, yeah, big signing. Happy with that.
Huge.
So, yeah,
wasn't
he staying? And hopefully that's an incentive for Bruno and all, because they're good mates.
Brazilian buddies.
Yeah, so hopefully Joe Linton committing his future here means that Bruno might be inclined to stay as well.
Exactly, because it wasn't long ago that Bruno signed a new deal. And obviously everyone talks about him leaving for the FFP benefit and maybe because of the release clause that's in there. But hopefully Bruno sees that and everyone sees that, because I think it's a huge intent by the club tying down Joe Linton, because Joe Linton, we're talking about there's not many Brunos, there's nobody Joe Lintons anymore. There's no one like him. So everyone would have a bit of him. Imagine, these teams that could do with Joe Linton in the middle of the park. You'd get into a lot of sides. I think he's unbelievable, and it does show ambition from the owners tying him down, and it's just as good really as getting someone this summer for me, because obviously we're desperate. I am. To see that midfield next year with Joe Linton, Bruno and Tonali.
You know what I kind of like and think it's kind of funny that I want to get your opinion on is how hated some players are. a lot of people say Gordon especially, but Bruno and Joe Linton, I've heard a lot of other fans say that they're the most hated player in the Premier League. Joe Linton, Bruno and Gordon. I hear that a lot. Gordon, I get because I hated him at Everton.
Yeah.
And I get it because, we've won a lot of penalties. But that's why VAR's here. He knows how to win a penalty. It's not that he's dived. The Calvin Phillips foul, I think, is a penalty because he swiped his legs. He got in, I think it was clever. He played for the penalty, but he played for it where he legally won it.
Yeah.
VAR checked it and give it, so you kind of complain at Gordon for diving or that it's not a penalty, blah blah blah.
Clever more than a dive.
He's done it, but yeah, people just hate our players. I think it's kind of funny.
I think it's especially
cry about on Twitter.
It's especially the Arsenal fans, obviously, for Joe Linton, and then pushing the back. Bruno because he wins fouls against everyone, and Gordon because he. Apparently, dives.
Gordon, Bruno's celebration from winning, throwing.
I think
people get rattled at that.
I think loads of people obviously hate us for the team photo with Dean, don't they? What are you doing a team photo?
Man United
beat Fulham.
Man United, especially because the scene in the documentary, the picture of when I think when we beat them last season after the cup final.
Aye.
So that picture's up in the training ground somewhere. And Man United think that that's about them. They're they're buzzing that they think that that win means something. So I think when we beat them earlier, they're like, oh, yeah, I bet you'll put that picture up an hour, won't you? Like, well, I will. Because we do it with everyone.
Everyone.
It's got nought to do with beating Man United. The fact is, we beat anybody. Yeah. Like, there's hundreds of these pictures, like, since the takeover.
All on the corridors at the training ground.
It's got nought to do with beating Man United. Like, don't think you're something special that we've, oh, we beat Man United, so we'll put that in a frame and hang it on the wall. Like, nah, that's not what it's all about. So, yeah, people are getting rattled at what we've done since, like, post-takeover. It's absolutely hilarious.
So, Jonathan's tied down. Hopefully, Bruno isn't going anywhere. Okay, we're going to touch on Yankuba Minta now.
Yes!
Because he's your guy. You've been picking him up for a long time. Future right winger at the tune for next 1,000 games. and he's on absolute fire at the minute.
He is, eh?
The battered Ajax the other day. He got 2 goals Ajax and an assist.
Yeah. Uh-huh.
I can't remember what the stats are for his season now, but he's obviously doing very well on that right flank for Feyenoord. The question is, would you recall him in the summer or give him back to Feyenoord or give him to somewhere else?
It's a one-year deal, isn't it? So we wouldn't recall him. He just come back.
He comes back to summer. Sorry, yeah. So would you send him out on loan again or would you keep him?
Nah, not at all.
Like, keep him.
I've probably said this half a dozen times on this podcast in the 11 weeks that we've done it. Like, for me, he could start next season. And we're speaking about, like, Chiesa.
Oh, so you want to save the money.
Other people, like, I think he's worth keeping in the squad to at least back up. But looking at what he's done, and I think I might have said it last week, he's playing at a high level. Like, look at Garancua, not doing Rick very well on his loan spells, and a few others don't. Like, he's at a high level. He's played Champions League. Like, Feyenoord's a big team. Like, if you go on loan, like Kual's in the Dutch Premier as well, but Feyenoord, Ajax, and PSV are the big dogs. Like, if you're playing in the Dutch league, then that's class. And not everyone makes it. Like, Kual's had a bit of a rough season playing for a team whose name I can't even pronounce, don't even know who they are. But, yeah, Minta's just looked absolutely class. I've related back to Dan Ashworth, like, everything that he'd done at Brighton. He just seems like the kind of typical Alexis Sanchez, Moises Caicedo type, Mitoma. Everyone that he signed, absolutely nobody's from nowhere, signed them for Brighton, put them out on loan, came back world class.
Yeah.
And I feel like he's the epitome. I think Kual was the first signing sort of in the Dan Ashworth era, so high expectations were on him. He was already a full-blown Australia international, had highlights about absolutely smashing Barcelona in pre-season. So he looked like my first big sort of young signing to get excited about, put him on loan to Hearts. Hasn't worked out for him in Holland. But Minta looks the real deal. And it's a position that we really, really need. Oh. If you put him right now alongside right now, fuck next season. Right now.
Maybe that's why I said recall. Getting back for Spurs.
Put him alongside Almiron and Murphy. Who are you starting?
Oh, all day long. I meant that, but it looks
so that's what I'm saying. Like, we could go out and sign anyone
Chiesa.
I wanted Diaby last season. But Minta just really, really looks the real deal. So I'm not saying he should be starting 11. I'm just saying give him a chance. Like, let him back up Almiron, or if you do sign somebody else, let him back up, ease him in, like Livramento. Just give him cup games to start with, see how he does, and then by the end of the season, I can guarantee he'll start.
Especially if we do get some form of European football.
Yeah.
Definitely keep him in. And then you Murphy can play against bloody Ajax in the Europa League or whatever it may be. Because for me, I would cash in on Miggy this summer. We wish we'd have sold him in January when the Saudi money came in, but he didn't want the move.
If you get a good offer, 20+, he's gone.
Oh, honestly, I would take that all day long.
At his age as well.
Yeah, I would take it all day long, and then I'd move him on. Murphy will be out of his squad because, to be fair to Murphy, I think he's done better at right back than he has right wing lately. When he had to slot back in there, we know he's got a decent cross on him, but he wasn't great against Fulham again for me. So Minta, he just looks so effective.
Yeah.
He looks a threat. He's got the pace. He's got brilliant ball control. Mm-hmm. He can cut in on his left, or he can keep going on his right.
Is he 19?
I think he's 19. So honestly, man, he's.
I know some people said last week, and I've seen a comment in there saying he's playing in an easier league. And I get it. But like, he's just torn apart probably the best team in the Dutch league. Like I say, if you're playing Feyenoord, PSV, or Ajax, they're the top dogs. Ajax are a pretty good team, and I know like we mentioned Alfonso Alves and Davy Klaassen and other Dutch players have come to the Premier League and looked mid, but have ended up shit.
Mm.
But I think he's young enough, and I think the whole development with the Dan Ashworth signing, the loan spell, the position of need, like right wing is a big position of need. Like I say, he's young enough, so you bring him back. You don't start him straight away. You put him in the squad, like reducing the cup games to start with, but bleed him in like we did with Tino. Like Tino didn't see any action until Man City in the cup, really.
Bruno didn't even.
Bruno had to take a little bit of time. So yeah, I think bring him back next year. See what he can do. Like give him up until January if he. If he's looking slower, then just put him out on loan again until the end of the season. It's fine.
Yeah.
Like, he's young enough to just continue his development, but I think he's better off being here and seeing what he can actually do in the Premier League as opposed to going, like, would you, if we loaned him again, would you give him back to Feyenoord, who, like, is a good team, European team, or would you do something better?
Mm.
Like, maybe give him to a Premier League team or a La Liga team?
Premier League would be ideal, but I couldn't really see that happening. So I maybe
like Bournemouth.
That would be great because they play good football and that. Yeah. So that would be ideal. That because then get tested against the teams that we'd be coming up against every week. But even if he did, like you just mentioned, went to a La Liga team. Do you know what I mean? If he went to, would Atletico Madrid be too much? Maybe a Sevilla or Athletic Club who won the Copa del Rey last week.
Who's the other one? Some young ones. Valencia.
Aye.
Valencia going to be a good move. But no, I want to see him here. I want to see what he can do here.
I think now...
Give him at least until January to see what he can do.
He should come here if the situation as it stands now with right wing.
Oh, yeah.
If that FFP thing comes into effect where you're not going to get points deductions anymore, you just get fines, sweet, we're going to smash cash on a right winger if you want. Because anyhow, that's one of the main targets. That's what the leak has been from the Athletic.
Yeah.
Saying that goalkeeper, right wing, obviously centre-back now, and a striker as the main targets for the summer. So four or five players at least.
That could be another argument for that, though. Like I said last week, we should bring Minda in to save money and concentrate on other positions. But if the FFP rules do change, we can go spunk a ton of money and buy a big money right winger. But if we also sell Almiron, then we'll just be down to new signing and Murphy.
Yeah.
So I'd still bring Minda back for depth. Just like I say, I think that's a good way to bleed him in. Like you just need to start every week.
No, and then do you know what it is? Obviously, we keep on getting these links with Chiesa. I suppose he, with his experience, especially on international level as well, we bring him for a minute to work under.
Yeah,
I mean, learn off Italian.
He's got to be 31, Chiesa, maybe. So I'd have no idea what he is, but I feel like he's been playing for a kind of long time.
He's been on FIFA for a while, hasn't he?
Yeah, he has. So yeah, like I say, like if you've got like a proper class. Elder, experienced right winger, and had Minta play under him. Even Murphy, like, you know, he's not world class, but he's experienced. He's been around, so like being in the kind of room with them two, with Gordon and Barnes, like wingers that now what to do. Like, I'd definitely bring him back until January.
Mm.
See what you can do.
Let us know in the comments what you would do with Yankuba Minta. Two more topics to get through. With a little look towards the Spurs game. This next one here is breaking news tonight. About the Adidas kit is apparently getting released on June the 7th after that came out in the court papers. At the minute, the club and Sports Direct are at war with each other in the courts because Newcastle have said that Sports Direct aren't allowed to sell the new kit.
Oh,
Sports Direct have obviously refuted that. They took us to court regarding that. And in those documents, it was stated that the new home kit will be released on June the 7th. Now, there's been a couple of leaks and rumours of what the kit could be, but that is your date, apparently, for the first Adidas kit in 14 years in Newcastle United.
It feels longer.
I was
surprised, man. I think I've seen your post on that on the channel, on Instagram and Twitter. Follow us if you don't already.
Actually.
Yeah, 14 years. It seems like so much longer than that, to be fair. But
I think it's because people only think of the good ones, the 90s kits.
Yeah,
that
40
years ago was Love and Crowns in the Championship. Costa Cream.
Was it?
2010?
Did we? Fucking hell.
2010? 2009, 2010? Kevin Nolan, Andy Carroll, Love and Crowns, Damien Duff.
I suppose when you think about it like that, Jesus Christ.
Mental.
Feels like we had Puma for donkey's years.
Yeah, and we did get Puma for about 10 years after that.
Yeah.
Not 10.
So what was the date there? June 7th.
Everyone's obviously saying they've missed a trick not doing it on June 9th. Blading races.
pushing straws a bit there. Like.
And is that earlier than most years? Because I always feel like we're the last team to put.
Well, thankfully, Adidas are maybe sorting out for once. I think last year the kit was June 20th or something like that. It was like second or third week of June.
Oh, that's because yeah, like in the last few years, we've always put our kits out. Probably the last team in the Premier League to release our kits. Back in the day, and I think someone mentioned it in the comments a few weeks ago about like kit release. Like, we always used to play like the last game of the season, and some teams still do.
Yeah,
some teams still play the last game of the season in the new kit. You get to see it. It's already released, so you're ready to go on holiday. Like, people go on their summer holidays, like June, July time.
Moneymaker.
Like, to get that kit. Right. Exactly, but that's what's for. That's why it's smart to get it out.
Yeah,
people want to go on holidays and have their new shirts and stuff. Like, but we didn't release us until fucking August. Like, it's just bad marketing, I thought. So,
well, it was
I think the sooner you get it out, like, is it when the season finished, like, so, like, mid-May is, like, the earliest until... Yeah, like first week of June. So that would be the latest I would put mine out, to be honest. So 7th of June's fine, as long as it's not like middle, end of June, like it probably has been in recent years.
Hopefully, well, we'll see Adidas changing everything. Won't they? They're obviously taking over the clothes shop at St. James' Park. They're going to be transforming that. Figures also disclosed during the tribunal suggested that Adidas' production run is around 375,000 shirts. So they're expecting to be a big seller.
Well,
It will be, because everyone bought this yesterday with the Champions League badge on everything. Yeah, so, with Adidas being back, you'd think that. And obviously, again, the fact here is that Sports Direct are challenging the club's plans to sell next season's shirts themselves and via JD Sports as an exclusive license. So, we're trying to get them away from Mike Ashley's shops, which you know he wouldn't be happy about.
It's a bit of a weird one, that. Like, I don't really know what to make of that, because
it's a bit of just kicking the. Kicking the groin for me.
It is a bit of a kick in the dick to Mike.
Give me
in all honesty, I'd just absolutely love to repeatedly kick Mike Ashley in the dick. But like Sports Direct is like an easy shop to get to. They're all over the bloody place. It's like the bloody plague. Like, they're just easy. You can get to them. Like, there's one on every high street. Same with JD.
It's like Greg's now, isn't it?
You go into Sports Direct and you see like all these mad like Spanish and Italian and French kits, and you think, who the fuck's buying that? Like, even like international ones, I'm sure I've seen like a South Korea one at one point. Like, so to not have a Newcastle one, like, especially on like a Newcastle high street.
In Newcastle,
it would just be weird.
But he knows it's going to affect him there, isn't it? So he's that's why they're obviously kicking off. Eh?
So I kind of get Mike Ashley's standpoint there. Like, obviously he wants to sell Newcastle kits because Newcastle's a big team now. Like, the win when he had one.
No.
But like, people
wasn't
actually
selling either.
People actually give a shit.
Everyone
now,
stopped buying the retro ones, Adidas.
Yeah, I feel like, especially in like a Newcastle high street, because I think I think I was trying to buy one. I think I was up in Scotland in September, and I didn't have the new shirt by then. So I think I was looking for one, but they didn't have notes. Like, their options were shit.
Mm.
So I was thinking, like, if new, like, they had Man City shirts, they had the fucking Scotland's buying a Man City shirt.
No.
So that's what I was thinking. I was thinking, like, why is Newcastle not like more popular? Like, we are a big team now. Like, we've had the takeover and whatnot, but I know it's going to take a while for it to be Man City's level and Man United and Liverpool and Arsenal and whatever. But like, but especially on Newcastle High Street, like, not to be able to get a tune top in Sports Direct or JD in Newcastle is weird.
Mm.
Like, as much as I want to hurt Mike Ashley and like,
I'm a fan of it.
Repeatedly kick him in the dick all day, every day. I think it's just a bit. It's a bit salty.
Mm, it is very salty. Yeah. Very salty. Anyways, let's finish off the podcast. Get your last few questions in. We'll be going on for an hour and 10 minutes. Cheers to everyone that's been tuned in. Next up at St. James Park is another lunchtime kickoff, and it is Tottenham Hotspur coming to Toon, 12:30, TNT Sports. Kit sponsors Seller have obviously confirmed that a special one-off shirt will be worn by the team. They're yet to confirm who the charity is that is going to be appearing on the front of the shirt. They haven't disclosed that information yet, but it's a nice touch, isn't it? The new one-off sponsor, one-off shirt against Spurs. Won't go into the team news and everything because we've been going on for a while now, so we'll just basically go through, Keg, how you think the game is going to go and give us a score prediction.
Oh, it's easier said than done, Spurs. They're a strange team to predict. They've had a very up and down season. last season absolutely rattled them.
Amazing. That's 5-0 in 90 minutes. Bring that back.
Yeah, it's hard. Home, hopefully we'll get a win. Obviously, hopefully I'm not just saying that to be a bit of an idiot, but hopefully... Oh, it'd be nice to get a win now, wouldn't it? obviously, hopefully we'll get a win, but I think we can, obviously. Like we were speaking about before, about the rest of the season, trying to finish sixth, big game against Man United. This is the only other big game. So I feel like if we can get a good start against Spurs with Sheffield United, Burnley, Crystal Palace coming up, like, I think just getting a good start will be major. So I feel like this is a bigger game than it's probably made out to be. Probably a lot of pressure on this game, but one that I do feel quite confident about. Like, I know the Fulham, to be fair, you know how it is, but last performances haven't really been great.
No.
We're shit for the majority of the West Ham game, even though we ended up getting a massive comeback. Mm. We dominated Everton.
A bit better against Everton.
We dominated Everton, but couldn't get the win. We weren't great against Fulham, but again, got the win. So sometimes that's what makes good teams, though. They're getting results out of bad performances.
Exactly, yeah. You want to grind them out. Alex Ferguson, you stayed out of the team, didn't you?
So, yeah, hopefully we can maybe just grind this out. It doesn't have to be the best performance. At home, you would like to think that it would be. I don't expect it to be like last season. I would love it to be.
No. It's also players injured.
Yeah, I think we'll grind this out. It'll be a hard, scrappy game that hopefully we can get at least a one-goal win over. Mm. Maybe it's 2-1 or something like that.
I think it's going to be a really tough game. It's going to be another roller coaster. It's going to be like West Ham and Larrigan for me. It's going to be very open. It's going to be end-to-end. Spurs are notoriously slow starters.
Yeah.
And they will be there for the taking of it with that high line. We could capitalise on that with the pace of Gordon, with Isak and that, and Bruno putting the ball over and loads of confidence from him. But this Tottenham team is completely different than the one we played last year. For one, they've got a different manager.
We got beat, didn't we?
Oh, we got pumped away 4-0. That's 4-1 or something,
isn't it? Oh, yeah, we did.
Ange is obviously doing a good job there. Been found out a little bit late, though. Kind of went off the rocks a little bit. But they've got a different manager compared to last year when we battered them. They've got a completely different team. Listen, Lloris was in goal from last year when he's not even there anymore. And a couple of the defenders have obviously now moved on. Eric Dier and stuff, Harry Kane up top. So it's a different Spurs team. It's going to be a hard game, different game.
Yeah.
But I'll back something mad. I think it's going to be like a 3-2 or something. But actually, on this one, I could see a draw. I could see a 2-2. Which wouldn't be bad.
If we got the 3-2, if we won, but we're dog wank. Would you accept
that? Oh, I'll take the 3 points. Dog won 3 points all day long now. Like, dog won three points for the rest of the season.
3 points is all that matters, and then bring on Man United whenever that comes.
Exactly. A few questions in to rattle through. Get the last couple in. If you're still watching and wanting to put them in, please do subscribe if you haven't already as well at the channel. Early one there from Chris at the start of the show. Even in Matty, if we can spend the limited money, why are we considering selling Bruno and Isak? Yes, we could recoup funds, but why do we need funds when we are the richest club in the world? Well, it's kind of two parts to that, because it's FFP, isn't it? Why you would need to recoup them. But if the rules do change, and obviously you're not getting these punishments like dock points anymore, and it's just fines, then obviously it makes our life a lot easier, and we have got a better chance of keeping those best players and still spending more money. Mm-hmm. But just because even these rules change slightly as well, it just still doesn't mean we can just go and spend 700 million.
Yeah, I was going to say, how much will the rules actually change? Like, that's the thing. Like, yes, we're technically the richest club in the world, but could you just absolutely just, if you want to do like Chelsea, if you want to just go and blast £1 billion in two transfer windows, like, could we actually do that without getting a massive fine? Or would be that much up the tits where the Premier would be like, you're getting a point.
You're just taking the piss a little bit here. Yeah. The rules have changed.
You've absolutely rinsed the rules here.
We would probably find a way to still get deducted points. Cheers to that one for Carl, seeing he's loving the podcast. Thanks very much. Aaron here is asking, do we still need two centre-backs if Burn is playing the way he is?
Oh, yeah. Oh, God, yeah. Yes. Yes, Aaron. Yes, we do.
We'll probably still do, to be fair. Like.
Especially because we know, well, actually, both will. I'm losing names. Botman, and it's the same injury for Lascelles. So we know neither one of them is going to be back until December, January, which is pretty much half the season. The squad depth wasn't great to start with. Mm. So, yeah, we're going to need to sign someone anyway. and missing half of the season for both of them. The squad depth's shocking. Mm. Like, you cannot really go into next season starting Shaw and Byrne and having any backups.
No, you can't. Like.
So, yeah, like, when they come back, it might be a different story, but, yeah, we would need to sign at least one.
Someone, Davey's asking there, can we recall Mintner? Could he come and play it back next week? No, we can't, and we wouldn't do that anyway. You'd let him just finish the season there. Danny's asking, pro kit v replica, which do you choose? Oh, I'll go for the replica because the pro kit's a bit tight in it, and it's a lot more expensive.
Oh, yeah.
So
yeah.
The pro kit that the players wear, it's really expensive. It's like 120 quid or something.
Yeah, yeah.
Whereas the replica's 70, 80 now. The New England tops are mad. Jackie with a 2-1 shout there for Newcastle on the weekend. 6-0. So we'll smash them again. Aaron says 3-2 Newcastle. Jordy's mentioning here the fact that Madison just completely got away with punching someone the other day. That was good, wasn't it? That's great from VAR. Didn't check that, though, did they? Punched someone in the chest. Didn't even get checked for VAR.
Didn't even say that.
Mental. Aaron, let's finish off on this question here. Dream signing for the summer. If you can pick one player, who you gonna pick? Is your dream signing? That's a really tough question. Dream signing as well. So I can't dream and I can't go crazy here.
Jesus Christ, I don't even know.
I was going to say a straight there, but Isak's still going to start for me.
I was going to say Haaland.
Haaland and Isak up top. Wait, in the league then, to be fair.
Why did they do that?
You're talking dream. I'm going to have a think. It'll be a right winger. Whoever's the best right winger in the world right now. I don't know who that is, but that's who I want. So I can have Gordon, Isak, and
I don't even know who the best right winger in the world right now is, to be fair.
I would say, honestly, I've always wanted that Victor Boniface from Leverkusen. I wouldn't mind, obviously, Osimhen would be a big of a dream signing, big 100 million deal. And a centre back as well. Give us an unreal centre back since the injuries are there, or an unreal keeper.
I
need to look at names again because I'm forgetting who we could sign this summer.
I'm still old school. Like, I think more about the past. Like, when you mentioned centre backs, to me, that you think about Sergio Ramos. I don't even know where he's playing now because he doesn't play for PSG anymore, does he? I don't even know where the fuck he is.
Sergio Ramos.
Yeah.
Went back to his boyhood clubs. Have you had, didn't he?
Yeah, of course he is. It's not him. and yeah, like Van Dijk, like he hasn't been. He's like 30 odd now, so you wouldn't get Van Dijk. Ruben Diaz.
I'm trying to think of like players in and around
us. Who's the best centre back in the world right now?
Who's the best centre back in the world right now? Probably Gabriel Saliba from Boston. To be fair, them two are on fire
in the world. Maybe it's Premier League. Is
anyone better than them? Who else we got? Some people saying Mbappe.
Yeah, it would be a big one.
Endrick, steal him from Real Madrid. He's gonna be good. He cry. Watch him cry. Every Newcastle.
No, can't be honest with him. Like,
I don't know who the best thing is. To be fair, nowadays, like all these youngins.
Take it back to 2009, though. I'll tell you how to do that.
Give you some tips about who's going to break through. We should have went through that list that you had of the top 20 young players from
bringing
Michael Choprose on that. Like, to be fair, we talk about going back in time. These players from
there's some Macams on there now
from the list from was it 442 or something? Was it
Match?
Match magazine. I used to buy that now. Match magazine.
Me granddad used to get that weekly. I used to have
the table on my wall and everything. Unreal. This is a list from Match Magazine out of Bellingham. That's an easy one. Jackie, I'll definitely have Bellingham. This is Match Magazine's Premiership Wonder Kids from 2002. Number 20, none other than our own Michael Choprose. Some of the mentions on that list there. Viana from Newcastle at 12. Milan Baroš. Some of them did alright, to be fair, in the end. Not great.
How Alton young Cole, was Milan Baroš in 2002?
I was going to say. Especially at Liverpool. You must have signed for them.
John O'Shea.
Grant Ledbetter was number 5.
Jesus.
And Thomas Butler was number 2 from Sunderland. Who the hell is Thomas Butler?
I was going to say, name sort of rings a bell, but I don't know if it does or not.
They got Colo Touré at 3 and Wayne Rooney at 1, right? Jermaine Pennant had an all right career. John O'Shea. Who the hell is, I've never heard of Vicente Avuso either.
Yeah, from Man City.
Kieran nice. Richardson. End up at the Macmans now, didn't he? Anyways, there we go. That'll do for this week's podcast. Someone should be signing you for a record deal. They're right there, aren't they? To be fair.
Ooh,
that's the next step.
Dreams, eh? Aye. Next step.
There we go. There's the next step.
TMC Records coming
TMC
at you.
TMC Records, aye. Can you get that in the works? Here's the new adventure.
Big Rennie album coming 2024.
Records, aye. We need to get X Factor started to go, to be fair. Simon Cowell. Sign me right up. Right then, thanks everyone for tuning in to this week's podcast. If you watched on YouTube, cheers. Please subscribe and like if you haven't already. Shout out our audio listeners as well. Remember, you can catch us on Spotify, Apple, Google, anywhere else you get your podcast platforms. Yeah. Subscribe to my channel to be, give this one a thumbs up, and enjoy yourself. There.